From a memory aid to multi-tenant, the .NET decision that exploded the scope. ApplyTrack started life as a glorified memory aid, a folder of markdown files so I'd stop forgetting where I'd applied and when to follow up. It is now an open-source multi-tenant, self-hostable application with MagicLink Auth, a two-runtime backend, and a CI pipeline that ships container images. This post is about the single design decision that turned the first thing into the second one, moving the core API off pure Python and onto .NET, and the avalanche of scope that came with it. It's also secretly a post about systems design. I've been told the thing that separates a senior or staff engineer from a strong mid-level one isn't knowing more frameworks. It's reasoning about trade-offs, invariance, coupling, and failure modes before you write a line of code. So as I walk through this rewrite, I'm going to narrate the systems design thinking out loud, the concepts I reached for at each fork, and why. The project was honestly an excuse to practice exactly that muscle. What it actually was at the start. The honest origin story: I kept losing track of job applications. Did I already apply to that company? When was I supposed to follow up on the screen? What salary did the post say before they took it down? So I built the dumbest possible thing that solved it. Every application was a markdown file with some YAML front matter. The whole database was a directory of those files. State lived in three JSON files next to it. Criteria BitJSON for my search keywords. Blacklist RearJSON for companies I never wanted to see again. Scene JSON so the discovery poller wouldn't show me the same listing twice. A thin, fast API app put a vanilla JS single-page app in front of it, and a Python puller scraped a handful of public job boards and dropped fresh matches in as new files. That's it. Single user files on disk, no auth worth the name. It was a memory enhancement utility, and for one person it was perfect. The schema was a slug naming convention. The migration story was git add. The deceptively small product decision. Then I decided to open source it and make it something other people could self-host for their own job search. On the surface, that sounds like a packaging problem. Write a README, add a Docker file, push to GitHub, ship it. It is not a packaging problem. The moment one person becomes many people on one deployment, every cozy assumption the file-based design rested on falls over at once. A folder of markdown files has no concept of whose files they are. Three shared JSON config files can't hold one search profile per user. No auth stops being charmingly minimal and starts being a data breach. A scene JSON that dedupes for me will happily hide your leads behind mine. This is the first place systems design thinking earns its keep. Multi-tenancy isn't a feature you bolt on the side. It's a system invariant, a property that has to hold on every single read and write in the system in both runtimes forever. Invariants are the things you design the system around, not checks you remember to sprinkle in. And the test of a design is whether it can even express the invariant you need. The file on disk model couldn't express this row belongs to that user at all. There was no place for the constraint to live. That's the tell that you've outgrown a data model. Not that it's slow, but that the property you now need is inexpressible in it. The fork in the road: stay Python or move the core to .NET. Here's where the real decision was. The path of least resistance was obvious. Keep it all Python. Fast API was already there. Reach for Sacuetibia, bolt on an auth library, add a tenant ID, foreign key, and grind it out in the language the whole thing was already written in. One runtime, one mental model, no context switching. I didn't do that. I moved the core API to .NET 10, ASP.NET core minimal APIs on Kestrel. Dapper plus musically over Postgres, DB up for migrations, and kept Python only for the discovery poller. The reasons that won the argument were all systems design arguments, not language preferences. The auth plus session plus concurrency surface is exactly what this stack is built for. Multi-tenant CRUD with optimistic locking, server-side sessions, and a hard request scoped security boundary is bread and butter, ASP.NET Core. The design principle here is don't hand-roll your load-bearing primitives. Identity, sessions, and concurrency control are exactly the parts where a framework's well-trodden spine beats a bespoke assembly of libraries, because the failure mode of getting them subtly wrong is data breach, not bug. Handwritten SQL over a typed data layer. Dapper maps SQL straight to records with no ORM mystery. This is a legibility trade-off. for a schema that two different runtimes have to agree on byte for byte. I wanted the SQL to be the explicit reviewable contract, not an abstraction generating queries I'd have to reverse engineer. An ORM optimizes for developer convenience. I was optimizing for the boundary being inspectable. I wanted the invariant to be structurally enforced, not remembered. A compiled statically typed API layer lets me make every query filter's tenant ID, a property of the type system, and the DI graph, rather than a rule in a code review checklist. The best way to enforce an invariant is to make violating it unrepresentable, and a typed boundary gets you closer to that than a dynamically typed one. I knew, choosing it, that I was trading a weekend of Python grinding for something much bigger. I underestimated by how much, but that's the other half of staff-level thinking. The cheap option and the right option are often different options, and the skill is knowing when the goal has changed enough that the cheap one is now the expensive one. The avalanche. Picking .NET didn't just change the language, it detonated the scope, because once you commit to a real API, you have to actually build all the things the Filebase toy got to skip. A real schema, and migrations to evolve it. The folder of foals became 9 dbup migrations, applications, search probables, blacklist, users, magic tokens, sessions, scene, pull resquits, and the cascade wiring, idempotent SQL scripts that run on startup. The slug naming convention became a unikey, tenant ID name constraint, and a validation choke point. Real authentication. I built passwordless magic link sign-in, request a link, get a single-use token, only at SHA-256 is stored, 15-minute TTL, verify it, and mint an opaque server-side session, deliberately not a JW day, so logout is instant revocation. Not wait for the token to expire. The endpoint that requests a link always returns 200 whether or not the account exists, so it can't be used to enumerate who has signed up. A tenancy choke point. This is the heart of the whole rewrite, and it's the single design pattern I'm proudest of. The system's design idea is funnel the dangerous decision through exactly one place. One middleware resolves the session cookie to a tenant, and it is the only place a tenant ID enters the system. Endpoints are handed a repository from DI that's already scoped to the caller. Endpoint code physically cannot query another tenant's rows because it never sees a tenant ID to get wrong. That's the difference between a security control and a security invariant. Instead of end endpoints each remembering to filter correctly, end chances to leak, there's one choke point and end endpoints that structurally can't. You shrink the attack surface to a single auditable function. Optimistic concurrency. The old design's version was a file's mtime and size. On a multi-user database, that's meaningless. So every application row got a real version column, writes pass. Expected vervins equals a mismatch answers 409 conflict, and the SPA's overwrite confirm flow drives off that two open tabs can't silently clobber each other. The design decision underneath is optimistic versus pessimistic locking. I bet that write-write conflicts are rare. Two people rarely edit the same application row at the same instant, so I don't pay the cost of locking rows on every read. I just detect the rare collision and make the client resolve it. Choosing the concurrency control strategy that matches your actual contention profile rather than reflexively reaching for locks is a very systems design call. Security designed in, not bolted on, graded against 20 years of OWASP. Once strangers trust the thing with their data, I'll secure it later is a design smell, so I audited the app against the OWASP top 10 and not just the current list. I ran it against 2 decades of the top 10, every edition back to the original 2007 list, because the categories that rotate off the list don't stop being exploitable, they just stop being fashionable. CSRF dropped off years ago, but a multi-tab session app still has to answer for it. The threat model is the union of all of them, not the latest snapshot. What came out of that audit? A strict CSP and a security header middleware per IP rate limits, an SSRF hardened link probe because a server that fetches user-supplied URLs is a confused deputy waiting to happen, DOM purify on rendered notes to kill stored XSS, generic 500s that don't leak internals, the no account enumeration auth surface, and a dependency audit CI. Jobs so a vulnerable transitive package fails the build instead of shipping. And then everything else that comes after, it works on my machine. a three-service Docker compose up, account export, a zip of your markdown, your data stays yours, and one-call account deletion via on-delete cascade and a tag-driven release pipeline that publishes both runtimes as container images. None of that existed in the MemoryAid version. None of it is optional once strangers trust the thing with their data. The compromise that kept it sane, polyglot, with the schema as the contract. The one thing I refused to do was rewrite the polar. It already had 8 source fetchers, the HTML scraping, and the scoring ddup logic, all in working, tested Python. Re-implementing that in C# would have been throwing away the part that already worked to satisfy a purity I didn't care about. So ApplyTrack is deliberately polyglot, a .NET API and a Python polar that never call each other. They share exactly one thing, the Postgres schema, and that schema is the contract between them. The system's design backbone here is clear data ownership. Every table has exactly one writer of record. .NET owns auth, sessions, and CRUDA, and it owns the migrations. Python writes new leads and reads profiles, the scene ledger, and the active user list. Ambiguous ownership, either service might write this, is how you get races and corruption that no amount of locking saves you from, so I made ownership explicit and one-directional. Both runtimes unconditionally filter where tenant ID, the cron worker doesn't get to bypass the choke point just because it's a background job, it builds a tenant scoped reader inside its per-tenant loop. The invariant doesn't get a day off because the request didn't come from a browser. Two more design choices in that diagram are doing quiet work, decoupling via a queue. The pull now button doesn't shell out to Python from C#. Synchronous cross-runtim calls would couple their uptime and latency together. Instead, it drops a row in a pull respits queue that the worker drains on its own schedule. That's the classic move. Turn a temporal coupling into an asynchronous one. The API can answer queued in milliseconds even if the poller is mid-run or restarting. Neither runtime blocks on the other. Failure isolation to blast radius. The worker processes tenants in a loop where one tenant's failure is caught and can't abort the others. When you have a shared background job, the design question is always, what's the blast radius of one bad input? And the answer here is one tenant's pull, not everyone's. This contract is the part I'd defend hardest in an interview. The temptation when you go polyglot is to have the two halves talk over an internal HTTP API, and then you've signed up for versioning, retries, authentication between your own services, and a second contract to keep in sync. That's accidental coupling dressed up as architecture. Making the database the single source of truth and the schema the contract meant there was exactly one thing to keep honest, with no network partition to reason about between the halves and a schema-shaped test on each side to guard against drift. Fewer moving parts that can disagree is almost always. The better system was the .NET decision worth it. Yes, but I want to be honest about what yes cost. If the goal had stayed, help me remember my applications, choosing .NET would have been malpractice. The Markdown Fools version was better at that job. Zero infrastructure, greppable, Git version, done in an afternoon. The whole multi-tenant edifice would have been a monument to a problem I didn't have. The decision was right because the goal changed. The instant the target became many people, one deployment, self-hostable, don't leak anyone's data. I needed a real security boundary, real sessions, real concurrency control, and a schema that could evolve under live data. Those are precisely the problems .NET's spine is shaped to hold, and leaning on it, instead of hand-assembling the same guards out of Python libraries, is why the tenancy story is one middleware and a scoped repo instead of a discipline I have to reprove in every endpoint. The lesson I'm taking with me is a systems design one. The scope explosion wasn't caused by the technology choice, it was revealed by it. The multi-tenant complexity was an inherent property of the problem the moment I went from one user to many. Pure Python wouldn't have made it smaller, just quieter and easier to get subtly wrong. Picking the stack that makes the invariant loud forced me to actually build the invariant. Going from a memory aid to a real application was never going to be a packaging task. It was a different application wearing the old one's name. And that, I think, is the actual content of be good at systems design. The thing I keep hearing is the gate to senior and staff roles. It isn't memorizing patterns. It's the habit of at every fork asking the questions this rewrite kept forcing on me. What invariant must hold everywhere forever? Where does the dangerous decision get funneled so it's auditable in one place? Who owns this data? And is that ownership unambiguous? What's coupled to what? And can I trade a synchronous dependency for an asynchronous one? What's the blast radius when this fails? Because it will fail. The stack I picked didn't make me ask those questions, it just made it impossible to skip them. Honestly, that's why I built the thing the hard way. A side project is the cheapest place there is to practice the expensive kind of thinking. The part I deliberately left out, a local frontier model. There's a feature I cut from V1 on purpose, an AI engine for drafting tailored cover letters and application materials. It was the heaviest thing to build and the scariest data to handle. So the disciplined call was to ship the tracker without it and leave a clean seam for later. Knowing what not to build yet is its own systems design skill. Scope is a design decision, but I keep turning over what that seam could become. And the answer that excites me isn't call an API. It's run a powerful frontier model locally, right next to the data. Think about the shape of this app. It's self-hosted, no telemetry, your data stays on your box. That's the whole pitch. The instant you bolt on a hosted LLM, you've quietly broken that promise. Now your entire job search, your resume, every note you wrote about a recruiter is flowing to a third-party servers to be logged and maybe trained on. A local model is the only addition that doesn't violate the thing that makes ApplyTrack worth self-hosting in the first place. Data locality isn't just a performance idea, here it's the privacy architecture. The model comes to the data never leaves. And once a capable model is sitting in the same trust boundary as the database, a lot of the app's rough edges turn into soft ones. Discovery gets a brain. Today, the polar scores leads with keyword matching, blunt, full of false positives. A local model does semantic relevance. It actually reads the posting against your history and your real preferences, not just your keyword list. It can extract clean, structured fields out of the messy free text every board formats differently, and explain why a lead scored the way it did. The materials engine, finally, draft a cover letter grounded in the specific posting and your own past applications, retrieval over your history, not a generic template. Tailor a resume summary per role. All of it on hardware you control with your writing never leaving the building. A research assistant over your own funnel. What stage is everything in and what's gone cold? Summarize every interview note for this company before my onsite. Which of these three offers fits what I said I wanted? That's RAG over data the app already owns. Here's the system's design payoff, and the reason I'm dwelling on it, the architecture I already built is exactly the shape that makes this a clean ad. The polyglot schema as contract design means a model runtime is just another worker against the same database, behind the same tenant choke point, owning its own rights, no different in kind from the Python polar. I wouldn't be retrofitting AI into a monolith. I'd be adding a third lane to a system that was already designed as decoupled lanes sharing one contract. The decoupling I did for boring reasons, keep the Python fetchers, don't couple the runtimes, turns out to be the thing that makes the interesting future cheap. Good boundaries pay you back in directions you didn't predict when you drew them, which is maybe the whole argument for caring about them, where this falls over at enterprise scale. I want to close on the most senior engineer move there is. Being honest about the limits of your own design, ApplyTrack is built for self-hosting and small multi-tenant deployments. Dozens, maybe low hundreds of users on one box. The architecture is deliberately right-sized for that. If someone asked me to take it to enterprise, thousands of orgs, millions of applications, an SLA, here's where I already know it would break. Roughly in the order the cracks would show. The single Postgres is the first ceiling. Every layer leans on one database, CRUD, the session lookup on every authenticated request, the poll queue, and the pollers' rights all land on the same instance. That's a single point of failure and a single point of contention. The first work is the boring load-bearing stuff, a primary with read replicas, a connection pooler, page bouncer, so thousands of clients don't exhaust backends, and moving the hot path session check off Postgres into a cache like Redis. Server-side sessions bought me instant revocation. At scale, that convenience becomes a per-request database rate I'd have to buy back with a cache plus invalidation. Pooled, shared, stingy tenancy hits a wall, both technically and on compliance. Row-level tenant ID filtering is the right call for hundreds of tenants, but it has a noisy neighbor problem. One tenant's heavy queries degrade everyone on the shared tables, and a trust problem, enterprise buyers, SOC2. Data residency rules often demand physical isolation, not we promise the where clause is always there. The escape path is a tenancy spectrum. Postgres row-level security is belt and suspenders, then schema pertinent, then database per tenant or sharding by tenant for the big customers. None of that is free. It turns one migration into N, and the choke point has to learn to route. The polar doesn't scale horizontally. It's one cron worker in a for loop. Fetch ons per run is a clever rate limit dodge at small scale, but the scoring pass is O tenants times listings on a single process, and a slow source stalls the whole sweep. Enterprise needs the work fanned across many workers, tenant sharding with leader election or partition assignment, so two workers never double process a tenant. A real broker, SQS Redis, CAFA, instead of a database polling poll resquisp rate limit budgets, and back pressure so a board outage doesn't cascade. Scraping public boards at all is itself brittle at volume, IP bands, CAPTCHAs, TOES, exposure, so at scale, you'd push toward official APIs and a shared caching layer in front of every server. The schema is contract that save be small becomes a coupling tax large. Two runtimes sharing one database is the perfect amount of architecture for two components. The shared database integration pattern is a known anti-pattern. The moment you have several teams and services, because it couples their deploys and their schema evolution. Past a certain size, you have to break the shared DB into service-owned stores that talk over events or APIs, which reintroduces exactly the versioning and contracts cost I was so happy to avoid. That's not a mistake in the current design, it's the trade-off having an expiry date. The identity model assumes one human per tenant. Today, tenant ID equal user ID fine for individual self-hosting. Enterprise means organizations, many users per tenant, teams, roles, and RBAC, SSO, SAML, OIDC, and SIM provisioning instead of magic links and an audit log of who did what for compliance. The schema was named to future-proof orgs, but actually building them is a real project on its own, and everything operational I got to ignore at one box. Single node Docker Compose has no HA, no rolling deploys, no autoscaling, that's Kubernetes or a managed platform, multiple stateless API replicas behind a load balancer, easy, since sessions live in the data tier, and a polar that's safe to run more than one of, hard. Plus the things multi-tenant SaaS lives or dies on, per-tenant metering and quotas so one tenant can't starve the polar, distributed tracing and structured logs, alerting and an unbounded growth story, partitioning and archival for applications and the scene ledger before the tables get slow. The through line, almost none of these are bugs. They're trade-offs I made on purpose for the scale I'm actually at, each with a known escape hatch for the day the scale changes. That's the real deliverable of systems design thinking, not a system that's ready for a million users, but one where you can name precisely what would have to change to get there and why you correctly chose not to build it yet. ApplyTrack is open source Apache 2.0 and self-hostable github.com Crypto Jones OS ApplyTrack. One Docker Compose up brings up the database, the API, and the polar. Your data is yours. One click markdown export, one call account deletion, no telemetry, no.